Hello, everybody. Welcome back to another episode of Bootstrap Web. Brian. Yes, it is Jordan, even though I sound like a different person. How are you?
Yes, sir. I'm doing okay. I think I'm doing a little bit healthier than you right now.
I feel okay again. The past few days were a little rough, but now it's just my voice and I feel fine. So end of year coming up, probably the last episode we'll be recording until the new year.
Probably, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, we don't have any big plans over here, but my wife and I have been talking about grabbing an Airbnb somewhere next week, you know, maybe into New Year's, just get away. We did that last year. I would like to go snowboarding, but there's just shitty conditions out here in the East Coast as usual, but yeah, might be fun to get away anyway.
Yeah, we've got family coming into town today, and we got another Airbnb across town that's kind of big enough to hold all of us. So that'll be fun. Hopefully I can get healthy in time for all the craziness and the Christmas stuff and the cooking and New Year's. But it'll be good. I feel like I'm going to do my best to unplug. I read a tweet recently by someone basically just describing like being a CEO is just keeping the terror away from everybody else.
Yeah, just shielding like the team from the...
Yes, all the paranoia and insanity. So in some ways, I feel like this next week is I get to just quietly work on stuff that I want to work on. Don't really have to share with anyone else. I can just let everyone just chill back. Everyone deserved it. The whole thing went great with the Black Friday and the holidays and all that stuff. We're still on track to do another $45 million in December like we did in November, which I thought it was going to slow down. I just want everyone to catch a break, take a week, relax. And then at the same time, I look at that and instead of being like, I'm going to do the same thing, I'm like, I'm going to plot quietly for what I want.
It's been a pretty big year for Carhartt. Pretty impressive.
It's been a big year. This is the fourth year, I think. It's like officially incorporated January 2015. So I guess it's coming up on 4 years. You know, but those first 2 years with the recovery product, kind of slow. Then the first year with the checkout product, just pain as far as the eye can see, getting the tech in order. And now it feels like this fourth year with the checkout product stable. You know, we did $100 million in processing that first year, and we did almost triple that this year. And MRR, whatever you want to call it, is directly in line with that. So we're happy, and I want everyone to kind of be able to take a breather, as I know, or at least I have this gut feeling, the team in Slovenia, the engineers, that they've been really pushing. And I think they work more than we do. And I don't want anyone to get burned out.
Yeah.
So I'm concerned on that.
Yeah. I mean, I think Audience Ops has been about the same time frame. I think it launched in early, mid 2015. This episode is sort of like our end of the year goal recap, kind of looking ahead to next year. I think you and I don't have a lot of like specific goals. And the big thing that with us is that I think you and I both have just a lot of stuff that we don't or can't talk about on the podcast. Maybe more stuff that'll come out later, like much later. But yeah, you know, we're just trying to keep it interesting here. But, you know, like looking back on 2018 about Audience Ops specifically, I feel like this past year was like the big return on investing all the time in automating and systems and process and removing myself from the business. Like 15, 16, and 17 were all about, well, mostly 15 and 16 were more about like I was spending a lot of time building the systems, building the team, getting the things in place so that the team can continue to grow even without my input, and you know, just managing all that kind of stuff and working through a lot of different types of kinks along the way. 2018 was really the year where the one thing that we added in Audience Ops was the podcasting service, and that is in Audience Ops now. That's a service line that we have. That work only took me a couple of months earlier in the year. Other than that, like, I didn't really spend any time on Audience Ops. Like, it just continued to run pretty solid, great team, great client base, really minimal on my time from week to week. So this was like that year where I was able to get a big return on that and actually do a lot of new things with my time and try to, you know, invest in new stuff, like mostly learning to code, working on new products, a lot of different products this year. I'm about to try to launch a new SaaS product next week. So yeah, it's been a really fun year, I think. And and I've been enjoying that.
That's pretty amazing the way you do that. I will continue to be in awe.
Well, I think this probably gets into, you know, this ongoing conversation. We'll get more into it a little bit later today about the how to self-fund or fund strap, or, you know, how to handle the runway and how to fund your time to work on new things. For me, this was that year where it was like, look, like a productized service business where you can use processes and systems to remove yourself, that does pay my bills, and it pays for my time to go work on new ideas without having to work nights and weekends. I mean, the other update just right now here in December is the new thing that I put out yesterday is sunrisekpi.com. Talked about it last week. I managed to get the site up yesterday, just in time for the podcast episode. You know, I pushed it out on Twitter, one tweet, and I sent a couple tweets earlier about, like, you know, some screenshots and whatnot, and like, it is getting a lot more reaction on Twitter than I kind of expected it to.
I saw that too.
This was supposed to be like a little side project, and I didn't even think it was actually going to be a real product. I think it's turning into a real product.
I saw the paid tier on the site, and I was very, very excited about that.
So what are we, like, what's today, the 21st? Oh, shit. So I'm hoping to get this thing, like, launched and out to the first users invited the first week of January. The app itself is basically built. I'm now going through and doing some styling, getting the UI looking good and feeling good. That part of it is kind of easy for me. The harder part is basically done, which is building the functionality. I want to tweak a few things on the functionality and write some more tests and things like that. But yeah, I basically have between now and January 1st to get it into a launchable state. I have the website all squared away. It's just a matter of getting the app, like, ready to take in users.
Okay, and then I saw you have a decent number of integrations, right? Because that's the name of the game in the app is connecting to existing services and putting them together to give you that one clear picture.
Yeah, so I have four integrations already built and working. So those are basically, they're the ones that I want to use personally, which are Drip, Google Analytics, Stripe, and Twitter. Now, I will be adding MailChimp, which should be easy because I did another practice project where I already worked with the MailChimp API. So I think that'll be pretty easy to add. I already have the code for it and everything. The other one that I would like to get in there as soon as possible is Google Spreadsheets, which I also think shouldn't be too difficult because I already have Google Analytics integrated. And that was actually, it took me many days to get the Google API authenticated and everything. And I got some help from some friends on that. So that's all working. So I think now that I have that API working, I can add on to that Google Sheets. And by having Google Sheets, that mainly opens up the door to Zapier. So the idea is, like, Sunrise KPI would grab the current value that's in a cell in your Google Sheet, right? So if you're collecting leads from a form on your website, you can have your Gravity form or your Type form or whatever feed into Zapier, which adds those leads to a spreadsheet and, like, tallies them up into a cell, and then you can send that tally into Sunrise KPI and have, like, number of leads be like another metric that you report on. So
yeah, I would also consider Baremetrics and ProfitWell. One of the things I do all the time is I go look at the MRR, look at the increase and decrease. I look at the thing I do is I look at the big picture MRR, then I look at the trend and I see what ProfitWell is predicting the MRR at the end of the month to be. And then I look at our churn and see what they're predicting churn to be. I mean, that's pretty granular, but you could pipe in MRR.
That's an interesting one. You're the first one to, like, kind of request something like a metric from one of the other metrics tools, which is interesting.
Yeah, I'm just trying to think about what I do every day, like go to the Bank of America. Go to
the account. The other, I've heard this request a couple of times now, is Shopify. I will probably do something like that. I've never worked really at all with Shopify, but at some point, not for launch or anything, but I will want to add like an integration to show like sales from Shopify.
Everybody's doing it.
Yeah.
Cool. Nice, man. Well, congrats on not just getting it out there and building it, but the feedback. That's very interesting. And I see the price point, I think, is appropriate for the beginning. My guess is you'll have 80-20 on the free side, but it's kind of an interesting exercise in building an audience of people who are interested in that.
Yeah. So like for people listening, my experiment here out of the gate, I'm sure this will probably change, is I'm going to have a free plan and a $15 a month plan for Sunrise KPI. And if you haven't seen it yet, basically it's like you grab a bunch of key metrics from a bunch of different apps, you pull them into one dashboard, and it sends you an email every day or every week or every month. That's what Sunrise KPI does. And this is like an experiment for me on like all different fronts. First of all, it's like I'm building a Rails app, a SaaS app myself with a free and a paid tier for the first time and actually launching it to users. Also a first time like releasing an app with a free plan, not just a free trial. I don't have a massive audience at this point, but like I wonder if getting too many free users might become a problem. I'll probably I think in the early days I'm just going to do invite only and just bring in a few people at a time and go from there. But we'll see.
That'll be funny if this thing turns into like a not a drain on your attention, but it will require attention.
Yeah, I guess. I don't know. We'll see.
there are worse problems to have if you put something out there that's popular.
Yeah. And I don't know about the price point. Like it feels usually something like too low for me, like $15 a month, but maybe I'll increase it. Maybe who knows? We'll see.
Yeah, we'll see. Cool, man. On my side, updates, I don't know what to tell you. I feel like we should just go right into the 2019 pontificating and thinking. And on our side, things are pretty good. Everything's nice and chill. Team's kind of taken their foot off the gas a little bit. We just brought in a new support specialist. So we're definitely a lot better at onboarding a new employee now than we were even a few months ago. Team is 18 now. And then number 19 joins the first week in January, another front-end engineer. So we're rubbing up against number 20, which is a trip. That's it. Now we'll see if we can make 2019... you know, the same growth rate as 2018. Yeah.
So I know that like this is the year or this is the time of year that everyone on these podcasts and blogs are doing like goals for the year. I wrote on Twitter, I think I did this last year going into 2018, where I'm sort of personally I'm done with setting like big annual goals or like just goals for like 12 months from now. I mean, it's just that's too far out to know what's going to happen. And year after year, after 3 months into the year, like things have changed so much that my goals change. I think I'm in 2019, I'm personally going to kind of follow the same approach that I had in 2018, which was, let me just focus on the next 60 to 90 days at all times. And I've got a couple of big themes that I'm thinking about. My businesses and my focus can change as the year goes on. And I think that's okay.
Yeah, I think it's a little different for me, but so it's similar in that I don't have like a specific goal, like 12 months for today, I want to be at X, Y, or Z. I mean, I have those in mind, but they're not like driving forces of what I do day to day. But I am starting to look at the product in like a multi-year horizon on, okay, this is what we're going to get done in 2019 so that by 2020, we're here. And by 2021, it looks like this type of a product. So I'm starting to think in multiple years, but it's when timing comes into play is when I'm sitting down with Ryan and Rock and we are looking at the roadmap. I remember last time we had a roadmap conversation, they basically came to me and said, okay, we can get X, Y, and Z done in 18 months. And I said, okay, that's nice. Go back and tell me how we can do it in 9 months. So that's like where timing comes into play in terms of planning. Yeah, and I'm looking forward to kind of explaining more about that as the year goes on, but not too much detail at this time.
Yeah, I think in years past, I got a little bit tripped up when I would, and I think a lot of our fellow bootstrappers fall into this where it's like 12 months from now, I want to be at X MRR, or 12 months from now, I want to be at 3X my current revenue. Like,
yeah, it's not bad, but
those are good goals to have, but to put a deadline on them, like it's just so hard to predict the speed at which that will happen. There are so many different forces at play. Like it'll either set you up for like, oh, I'm behind schedule on this thing and that stresses you out, or you're like way ahead of schedule and and then you kind of don't have a driving goal after you reach it faster than, you know, so it's, I don't know. I just like to look at those goals, but not really give them a deadline. And I don't care about like keeping myself accountable or motivated. That stuff is sort of like built in at this point, you know?
Yeah, I will say in terms of personal motivation, yes. But in the internal, the team dynamics, we are about to get much more concrete in our goals and accountability in terms of like how many leads, how many accounts, how many upgrades, how many tickets and support. And so I think we've been pretty loose on that so far. And 2019 is going to start to get a little bit more formal on that. But those are like internal metrics. But anyway, what we wanted to do in this conversation is, and this is your suggestion, which I really like, is really talk about where we think the current state of affairs is when it comes to these individual topics like funding versus bootstrapping and everything in between, like marketing, what works these days to get something off the ground, what works to, you know, grow something.
Yeah, or product, like thinking about product.
Right. What is an MVP these days? So over the past few years, this sort of thing has kind of moved around. So it's good to kind of check in on where we see things are. Where do you want to start? You want to start on like marketing, sales, funding?
Well, just like, I guess overall, just thinking about like all these different topics as a whole, I don't know if this is just a result of you and me being in this space, these circles, these communities for many years now, but I just feel like there are more people who are doing what we're doing. There are more people listening to podcasts, more people doing podcasts, more people starting stuff up, more people wanting to go to places like MicroConf and Big Snow Tiny Confs and other places like that. Like more people wanting to leave their jobs and start something, you know. And so with that, I think comes more of these discussions. Of course, like it's way more competitive now with a lot of different software products, and I feel like the consumer base and people who buy products, both businesses and consumers, has changed a lot recently. That people are becoming more savvy, so the answers to all these questions has changed a lot from what you may have heard on podcasts even just like 2 or 3 years ago, you know.
Yep, I remember when we first started. You know, we talked a lot about getting off the ground with cold email. That's not really part of the conversation these days. People focused on content marketing alone to build an audience. And it feels like now that's really, really hard to make that work. And content marketing is a piece of the marketing strategy, but it's not the whole thing. So it's moved around on how good of an MVP you need because of the competition out there, how to get your first users, how important an audience is, an existing audience, as opposed to, you know, it's still the hardest thing is still just going from being an unknown person with an unknown piece of software to getting those first few customers. It's still hard as hell.
Yeah. Well, I guess on that note, like one of the things that I've been seeing and thinking more about is this idea of freemium, free trials. There used to be a thing where, requiring credit card upfront for a free trial. I feel like at this point, that's one of those things. In most cases, I don't like to say in all cases, but like in most cases, asking for a credit card up front, it's just, I don't see it done nearly as much as it used to be. It used to be like the default, like you should require a credit card up front so that it's easier to convert after the trial.
Is that not it anymore? Because if so, I'm behind.
I don't know. I just feel like I haven't seen a business SaaS app in a while that required my credit card up front. And I've heard and sort of seen this too, where it's like, if you require a credit card up front, you're preventing a lot of leads from signing up, because if they have like a company credit card, they need to get approval just to put it in. Like, let them try the product first. And I'm even seeing like, I feel like more SaaS apps are using freemium than they used to. Even bootstrappers, or even, you know, if you're self-funding, I feel like personally, I used to be completely anti-free anything. And I'm thinking about it more than ever, just because I feel like it's to compete and to just get more volume in the top of the funnel. It just seems like, yeah, there are a lot of risks and things you need to manage, but it just seems like, you know, offering a free option, letting them try it out, letting the product speak for itself and get people using it and feeling it, like that's how you drive the conversions, I hope.
Yeah, and there are hybrid approaches now as well. So I'm in a Slack group with a bunch of entrepreneurs here in Portland. And we've talked about this over the past week about these hybrid approaches. So we've required a credit card up front the whole time for the checkout app. For the recovery app, what we did was we let people in without a credit card, let them set up the account, and then before they launched their campaign, basically before they got actual monetary value from the app, that's when they put the credit card in, and that's when the 30-day trial started. So that was a bit of a hybrid approach. Then we went back to like traditional, requiring a credit card up front on the checkout, and now we're about to change the checkout onboarding. So what we're going to do is let you connect your Shopify store and then build a funnel. So you're really experiencing the core piece of the product, not the integrations and not the tracking and not all this other stuff, but the core of the product of building a funnel. And then in order to take your funnel live, that's when we'll ask you for a credit card. So it's a similar approach. The volume is what's on my mind. So we have a few hundred customers and we have a relatively high price point. And I used to feel smart about it. Oh, look, we have fewer customers and make more money. Isn't that smart? And in some ways it is. But in other ways, we're also, like you said, cutting down on the number of leads. And that feels like we're giving away a lot of the market to the inferior product that is cheaper. Whereas if they got a chance to see the quality of the product, I think we'd convert more. So what I've told our support team is just get ready because we're about to support a lot more people and not necessarily more customers just yet. We're going to be talking and working with people that aren't paying customers yet, so Ryan's been working hard on that onboarding flow because the goal is to let people in, let them see the product, but we're not actually supporting them, right? All the support comes into the integrations and the tracking and that sort of thing. So that's the goal is that they're seeing it, but we're not actually supporting people that don't have a credit card on file. That's the goal anyway.
See, I think that's what we're getting at here. That's different now from a few years ago is that it's so competitive that A, the product needs to be on point, and that is the marketing. It's like a product first. Product and marketing are almost one and the same at this point. I'm not just saying like if you build something, people will magically come to it, but the product itself has to be it has to fit like product market fit. Like it has to be differentiated enough that the right market wants to talk about it, but they have to go experience it in order to be able to go talk about it. And so there has to be a low barrier to getting in and getting your hands on the product, which is where free trials and freemium come into play. Figuring out that question of like, what is unique? What is like share worthy about this product? Even if you're in a competitive space, like what's the one feature, you know, like I'm thinking about Process Kit a lot now where it's like, yeah, it's going to compete with like project management tools and process tools and everything, but it's for repeatable work. That's the word. That's the focus that I want to drive home that people could talk about. Like if they're doing repeatable stuff or they're assigning repeatable stuff, this is the tool that enables that. You know, I'm thinking about like Sunrise KPI where it's like, yeah, it's a dashboard tool. It has all these different integrations, but the key is that it sends you a daily email or a weekly email. And that seems to be the thing that has resonated with people. Yeah, there are other tools that send emails too, but like that's like the selling point that I want to kind of focus on, you know?
Yep. And I see some of the most successful SaaS marketing is almost like marketing of features. It's less talk, it's less fluff, it's less content that's further up the funnel. But if you recall a few years ago how successful Kissmetrics was at putting out great content, webinars, great blog posts, super in-depth, great guest posts, and they would build up an audience, and then they would use that audience as their target list to generate leads from and then convert. And that feels like it's really hard to do right now to stand out in a market of content. Whereas what I do see working is people showing progress in their app with new features and new integrations and showing off how it works. And that's attractive.
Yeah. Yeah. And if you're small, if you're a solo person or a small team, you know, I think getting back to honestly like personal brand and sharing your progress, I feel like that's a good get things off the ground. If you don't have a huge audience, you know, that's a good first place to start, is like show what you're working on, show work in public, make what you're working on interesting enough that it's easy to talk about and get feedback on and get people sharing it and get people kind of rooting for you. I used to think it's not smart to invest too heavily in promoting the personal brand, or, you know, I don't want the business to be too dependent on me or my name. And I don't even think it's that anymore. Like, yeah, people follow me and what I'm doing, but I'm hoping that the work speaks for itself. Like the things that I'm building should be hopefully over time get interesting enough that it starts to spur from there, you know?
Yeah. You don't need to be a rock star. It's not really, it's tangentially about you, but people follow other people and are like attracted to those people because they're doing cool things, not just because they're like, you know, just awesome on their own. Yeah, I think of the CEO of Todoist. If you follow him on Twitter, he does an amazing job of just like basically calling out love for his team, showing the new features that they're doing, engaging in the conversations with people about, oh, they launched dark mode, right? It's like cosmetic, but people like it. And then he's talking about it. He's getting feature requests. He's getting small like UI feedback. And it's just an engagement about the product itself. And that makes him more attractive and the product more attractive. I think about like Peter Soom, who's a dev out in, I think he's in Scotland. So he did WP Pusher. And now he's launching something called Branch, which is like for continuous integration for WordPress devs. So instead of just like talking about it or not talking about it at all, he puts out a video like showing what he's working on. And that's just attractive. And people all of a sudden are interested in what's coming next. When's it going to get launched? How much does it cost?
Yep. Yeah, like even like you know, you look at like Drift and, you know, David Cancel and what they've been doing with that podcast and their conferences and everything. Like Drift only launched what, like two, three years ago? Like they haven't been around for that long, but that's very much like a founder driven, or at least to begin with, it was a founder driven product sort of thing, you know?
Yes, but I do see the Drifts of the world and larger startups in a different category. It's just a completely different thing when you have big budgets. Like your content looks great. You can do conferences. You can do events at a different scale.
Yeah, I'm not saying like, you know, his podcast alone was what launched everything, but I feel like that played a big role in it. Like, yeah, the money like it puts a lot of firepower behind it in terms of getting the product built really fast and really well, but like, I don't know, getting people talking about the product in a competitive space, it was...
You still have to do it right.
Yeah. What else do I have? Yeah, like you touched on this earlier, like, you know, things like cold email, I feel like I haven't seen great results with it. I've tested it a few times in recent years and it worked a little bit in 2015. I haven't seen it work in 2017 and 2018. PPC, I mean, you know, pay-per-click, like, I think that's like kind of off the table, to be honest, for bootstrappers, for self-funded. Like it used to be like one of the channels that you might test at some point in your first year. Like, can this be a customer acquisition channel? I just don't think you can even look at pay-per-click to get your very first customers. Like once you're ready to start to scale up and you have bigger budgets, yeah, it's another channel to add to the mix and you know, combine it with content and other things. But like, to get those first customers, you can't plan on using PPC, in my opinion.
Yeah, I mean, advertising,
it's just too expensive.
It is expensive, and it's tough to know where to go because Facebook's gotten more expensive, and Instagram is like not really B2B. I mean, you can do some stuff there, but not much. And Google still works, but people need to have intent for what you're doing, and there needs to be a sufficient level of search. Look, advertising definitely still works. But just getting it off the ground, that sounds like a pretty risky way to spend your budget. Yep, good for testing, good for getting it out there. But as a strategy to go from like zero to 10K in MRR, that's a tough call.
Yeah, I mean, because you have so many other things to invest in, namely your time or paying a developer or paying for a solid design or paying for some first pieces of content or something like that. But like, because you need to spend so much just to test, just to get data. And like the cost per click, just for a click, not even for a lead, is kind of insane. So like, Yeah, it's tough.
I'd spend my time doing integrations with partners, building up relationships that way, seeing if they can co-market with you, getting you out in front of their list. Like those things are just more effective to get off the ground.
So how, you know, why don't we kind of circle back to this ongoing conversation we keep having, which is great. You know, talking about self-funding and sustaining the runway, especially through that first or second year of getting something going. I mean, obviously the conversation heavily right now is around, you know, fund strapping and the new funds, like, you know, Tiny Seed and what's the other one called?
Earnest
Capital.
And Indie. Yep.
Indie VC. I think it'll be really interesting to see how these things change the landscape in 2019. I'm really excited to see what happens there. I'm also just excited to hear, like, I really just like hearing more people, more, whether they're on podcasters or talking in private groups, about the reality of making this work with a family and kids and being able to build something and make a viable business. When I say reality, I mean like talking about how hard it is, almost how impossible it is to build a brand new business from zero if you have a full-time job, or if you like just working nights and weekends, that's not an option anymore.
It's tough, man.
I mean,
it is always an option, but it's tougher and tougher.
Even if you have time, like I have time to work on my apps and I'm still not expecting, you know, Process Kit to pay my full, to pay all my bills by the end of 2019. Like that's not going to happen, you know?
Yeah, it's unlikely to happen these days to get a SaaS to 10K in the first 12 months. If you did, you're in the top 10% of bootstrappers.
Yeah, and if you have a partner or two partners, that's double or triple, you know.
Right. You go back to that Jason Cohen talk, that still rings true. So you need 10K per founder as soon as possible, and then you have more options.
The things that I'm thinking about here are like, okay, I have my time funded, basically. I don't spend a lot of time on my current business, so I can spend it on products, but still, like, how do I get up to that 10K or generate just enough cash in the door to keep extending that runway? You know, that's why I'm doing multiple things. But one of the things that I'm thinking about, like with Process Kit, is like not only, you know, thinking about how I'm going to price the software alone, but like service plus a software, you know, like adding a paid consult, like a process consulting piece to it, you know, that could be an option, or some sort of like, you know, recruiting service to help you build your team with Process Kit, like, you know, built into the back end, like things like that. I feel like are still a good option to consider, like to add a, you know, because that's essentially like enterprise sales for SaaS, but doing it up front during the startup phase. Like if you have the time, if you have the hours and the expertise, like, I look at, I don't know if he's still doing this now, but I know early on with Right Message, Brennan was, he basically started Right Message out of consulting work. Like he was building custom implementations of Right Message for clients for lots of money in a week. And that's still an option to like fund your startup with services related to the software. I see that as an option.
Yeah. And you're ideally in conversation with people early on in your market when you're trying to get those initial first customers. And those relationships end up being a lot deeper. I know that first year, the relationships I made with customers, they were much deeper than, you know, right now I don't really talk to that many people. Recently, a new big direct-to-consumer brand came in. And I knew the CEO was going to be on the call, so I joined the call, and I want to form that relationship. But in the beginning, you're talking to people in the industry all the time. You're getting to know them. You're getting them to trust you. That's the most straightforward way to bring in money in the door. Once they trust you, you say, what else can I do for you that's related to this? It's services and it's savings. Those are your options on money. Now,
on the savings piece, like there are ways to make moves in your career to position you to have some savings to fund half a year or a full year to get up to a point where maybe you can do some more. Like, so if you're a developer and you're making more than you need, which some developers do find themselves in that position, if you hate your job, like you can think about working for another year and banking as much as you can to prepare for the next year and have some savings, you know, another option is to go part-time, like have a part-time job where you're doing 15 hours a week to pay for half your bills and use some savings from the job to like to fund the rest while, you know, like you can get a little bit creative with how far you can take that. But, you know, then of course there are these new options like the tiny seeds and the, you know, the earnests, like.
Yeah. And that will still remain for a small percentage of people, but it is healthy. What I hope is going to be interesting is 2018 was a lot of talk, and hopefully 2019, we start to see these things play out. So IndyVC has been out there investing. They've been doing that for, I think, maybe 2 years. The interesting thing out of IndyVC is that they're coming out with their new terms, their version 3, I believe, in January. So that'll be interesting to see what the terms are, because those terms determine the fit with founders that are naturally, you know, attracted to bootstrapping. If the terms are too onerous or misaligned, that will hurt. Also in 2019, we're going to see Tiny Seed. And I can say now very happily, proudly, that I'll be joining Tiny Seed as a mentor. And so I'll get that frontline view of how founders are thinking, what kind of founders are attracted to it, which are not attracted to it, or which are too far along. Like, what does it actually mean to make that decision to take on that type of funding? Hopefully Earnest Capital comes out there and also starts to make investment in early 2019. And what we can all hope for and root for is that those first classes of Earnest and Tiny Seed do well. If they do well, then LPs who are going to invest in Tiny Seed will be more likely to invest in another fund or a second fund from Tiny Seed, and then that'll create more opportunity for founders. So that's, I think all of us should be really focused on the first classes, those first, call it 10 founders in Tiny Seed, maybe another 10 in Earnest. And we really want that to do well, because that is what will open things up for the LPs to say, hey, this is actually working. I'll put in another $1 million.
Yeah. Yeah. I think it'll be really interesting to see. Like I said last week, you know, I'm interested to see what change, like what will be different in the strategy for a company that's in the program. It really depends, like literally, like how much cash are we talking about for these companies, and how many partners do they have? Does the startup have, you know, like, can they actually live on that for a year? And is 12 months even long enough to get them to a point where they still won't need to take a job after a year? Even if they get up to 5K MRR, like that's not a failure, right? But you can't live on that. Like, so it's, you know, like it's an interesting, we'll see, you know.
It's much closer to bootstrapping than it is to venture capital, right? VC, you can see, you know, you basically immediately get a nice office and hire employees and give it a go in that way. And you look at your runway and you say, okay, 18 months from now, we either need to hit these milestones and then raise more money, or probably not going to work out. Whereas, you know, the majority of us don't think that way. Our priority is staying alive. And so we're going to manage our cash with the assumption of never going to raise money ever again. If that's the nature of it, you know, 100, 150 grand in investment is really not going to change that mindset. It's not going to be like, well, once I run out of this 150, then I'll go raise another 500. It's just going to be, how do I get the profitability on this 150? Which is a healthier approach.
I would want to think of it more like a cushion. Like getting the 150 is, and we don't know what the actual numbers are. I'm sure it'll be different for every company. But like if I had 150, I would hope to not have to touch it until later. Like still have the mentality of how can I get more cash in the door as soon as possible, whether that's through add-on services or annual contracts or whatever that is, you know.
But I think it would need to be related to the SaaS. If I were an investor and I was giving you 150K, it would be, okay, let's try to make this work. And if you want to bring in additional cash outside of subscription revenue, let's go for it. But don't go off and work part-time on something else, and don't do consulting that's unrelated just from, like, let's say a previous gig or something. But I don't know if they care for that level of control or, you know, formality or whatever that's going
to
mean.
You know, just talking to other bootstrappers, like, it's, I've heard that question come up of like, well, like how much extra cash am I allowed to generate on the side? You know,
I mean, I remember thinking similarly before we raised money, like, oh, once you get investors, like, you know, you can't
everything
do anything
has
else.
To be in this company.
You know? In reality, it's really up to you, and you're putting that pressure on yourself more so. Maybe it's different if you take institutional money and not like friends and family, but you know, for my part, I just send an update every 2 months or so and keep things moving forward. I can't foresee a situation where someone would be like, don't take that consulting gig because you should be focused on the business. It's maybe they would be quietly disappointed or something like that, but it's that level of control doesn't really exist.
Yeah. But I think having the mentors and having the peers in the group, whether you're in a program like that or you just get yourself in networked with other people doing this, that's just so valuable, you know?
Yeah, it will change the nature of your approach to your business, no matter what you say. It will. Taking other people's money will add pressure for good and bad. I think the mentorship can help. It will change the nature of it, but I think that's what you sign up for. You know, nothing's free.
Here's just a random question. We can wrap up after this if you want, but you know, we see the news. We don't talk about like politics and all that bullshit here on this podcast. But, yep. We see the news coming, you know, talking about like recession is around the corner and all this craziness with the, you know, the toddler in chief in there. And like, my question that I think is on my mind a little bit is like, when does that BS actually start to impact us? Like what we're doing here with building our business? Because I feel like a lot of us have done a really good job of ignoring it, not talking about it, and just heads down, we're working on our business. We don't care what's happening. And that stuff, it almost seems like entertainment. Like literally I'm reading the news every day, like as crazy and depressing as it is, it's sort of like entertainment and it doesn't impact my life. But in 2019, I feel like we're starting to turn this corner where that might not be the case. I don't know.
Yeah, no, I think you're onto something there. I know over the past few weeks, my attention has turned to the word economy much more than previously. I'm with you on like the detachment of it being almost entertaining. Other people around me here in Portland, especially, they get upset. They get genuinely upset. And I've kind of blocked that out. Where I'm like, I got my own problems, man.
I mean, I get just as frustrated and just as like, you know, fucking just flabbergasted as the next person, but still at the end of the day, my life is doing just fine right now.
Right. And that's the right thing to focus on for the most part. Now, where it might get weird, and it doesn't even matter whose fault it is, right? Presidents, sometimes I don't know if it's a one person's fault, if it's a president's fault, whether the economy is good or bad. Yes, policies make a difference and trade wars and all this other kookiness that's happening. But it does feel like what's coming down is kind of coming down no matter who's in there or what's going on. Like, yes, there are things that can change it, and a government shutdown right now is really not what we're interested in. And there is a feeling right now of everyone is raising money. Everyone in the VC game is raising money because everyone's scared. So that has definitely affected me. And now I think about it both defensively and offensively. Defensively in terms of, whoa, maybe we should raise money to be safe. Offensively also as in, maybe we should raise money because our market, e-commerce, is going to get hammered in an economic downturn. Shopify is going to go through a lot of pain on an economic downturn because they have a huge portion of the bottom of the pyramid in the people just starting out and dropshippers. And so to position ourselves, so I'm thinking through it much, much more now than a few months ago. And it does feel like the party is going to come to it. It's been a wild, wild run.
It's been a wild run, and it's been about that 10-year mark. I don't know, like, isn't there that stat of like literally like every 10 years for the last like 8 decades, there was some level of downturn. But like purely thinking about the economy for a second, like sometimes like there is some opportunity there for folks like us. A lot of our SaaS apps or services are like replacements for hiring or like alternatives to hiring workers. So like when the job market takes a hit, like sometimes like you're, you know, in certain sectors, like even e-commerce, like, yeah, I could totally see how retail and e-commerce would be slammed. But at the same time, like if you're in the business of squeezing more conversions out of like optimizing it, like, yeah, those are the types of things that e-commerce would be looking to do like in a downturn. I went freelance in January of 2008, and the crash didn't really happen until like later in the year in 2008. So sometimes I look back, I'm like, I'm lucky that I went freelance at the time that I did, because had I not gone freelance at that time, I probably would have just held on to my job. And I don't know if I ever would have left the job after that. Because if a few more years went by and I get married, who knows? Like, so there was that first year of freelancing, then the crash happened. And then 2009, my second year of freelancing, I actually had a really good year. I had a lot of really big clients. Like my first batch of really big clients came in that year, in large part because of the Great Recession. Like,
and that's because it felt better and safer for a company to take on a freelancing project.
To hire freelancers.
Yeah, right now it feels very much the opposite. Right now it feels like, well, why don't we just hire that in-house instead of paying for it and not really having the control? We'll get better quality if we hire in-house. I can definitely foresee a situation where if the economy went bust, I would be looking at our fixed expenses and doing everything possible to avoid our fixed expenses going up. Fixed expenses mostly being derived of labor. So to look at a project and say, I'm willing to put 15K on that, like call it 5K a month for a freelancer, I'd much rather do that than increase our fixed expenses by 5K a month. We've thought through our services plan here. And it's interesting to keep that in mind. As of right now, it's almost like you're like arrogantly saying, no, I'd rather stick with the software. Let's not add services. And you could see economy goes down, right? Number of signups goes down. One of the first things we'll do is launch our services to our existing customers, because and that might even match up with their desire to outsource more stuff as opposed to hire. But still, would rather it not turn down, but it's inevitable. So, you know, no point in pretending that it's just going to continue like this forever.
Yep. So a lot of question marks heading into
a lot of question marks.
You know,
we control our destinies for the most part, and then we are at the whim of larger forces sometimes as well.
Yeah.
Yep. That, and I need more Advil. That's where we are.
True. All right, buddy. Brian, well, let's leave it there, and I will see you all in the new year.
Happy holidays, my man, and a happy new year to everyone listening out there. We'll talk to you in January.
All right.
All right. See you, bud.